The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network. It's my privilege to have on the line today, A.R. Bernard. It is so great to have you here, a pastor and a leader from the Brooklyn area, and it is so great to know that you're coming down also to be with us in September for the big Better Man event. That is an event, all right, and we're glad to have you along with us, and just welcome to my program today.
Mike, so good to be with you and your listening audience, and yeah, we're looking forward to coming down in September for the Better Man event. In fact, we just flew back from Los Angeles doing an interview for a special guest that's going to be part of the event.
Yes, well, you know, kind of one of those names that we might have heard of, like
maybe.
Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah.
So you've known Denzel for some time, right?
Gosh, yeah, I've known him and his family for over 20 years, and I've had the opportunity to pastor him and mentor him. Of course, the rest of his family, his lovely wife, Pauletta, his incredible children. And it's been a special honor to, you know, help him navigate his spiritual journey.
Well, you know, that is a privilege to have a person that is so known, looked up to. So many people in America wonder what it would be like to have that responsibility of pastoring celebrities the way you do. But Denzel Washington is far from the only one that you know.
This is true. And I will tell you the key word in these relationships with them. It's the word trust.
Yes.
You have to earn it and you have to maintain it. That is foundational to any relationship, but especially with them, because so often they have to discern whether people genuinely like them as a person or just their notoriety, their fame, their stardom, you know?
Yeah, that is something that most of us can't even get our brain around, what kind of pressure celebrities live under. Sometimes it's a situation where they are their own worst enemies with the press. But many times, and I can tell you this, when I tell you this, I mean from even a bit of a personal experience. I was a weather guy up in TV land in Evansville, Indiana, and even the way people treated their local TV personalities that would do the news every night was a taste of that I just did not like one little bit. And I can't imagine what that would be like on a global scale that Denzel has to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's very, very real. And, you know, you say on a global scale, you're absolutely right. He is incredibly loved by everybody. I mean, it's just amazing. Just through his film, his work, but also there's an anointing upon his life. And he now talks about a prophecy that his mom gave him about him spreading the gospel. And that is a passion of his, especially at this stage in his life.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful thing.
I don't want to spoil the surprise.
No. But I'm really excited about the fact that he's coming to be with us via this interview that you were able to do, and that you're going to be actually live at the event along with Toby Mac. It's going to be a big event. If you're listening and you're just now hearing about this year's event, you can go to our website, and on the little banner, the rotating pictures that happen, we call it the slider on the homepage, you'll see the Better Man event advertised right there, and you'll see a picture of my guest today as well as the rest of the guests that are going to be there. But we're really, really excited to have you in town for that one. Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
Oh, gosh, Mike, my story begins in the country that I was born in, Panama. And my mom was an Olympic track runner. She ran for Panama, Venezuela, Jamaica, and she was on her way to the Helsinki Games. He was a sprinter.
How about
and,
that?
Gold medalist and silver medalist. And she met my father. And my father was twice her age, a restaurateur. And unfortunately, she lost her virginity to him, you know, a young girl. And she became pregnant with me and made the very important decision to keep me, but also losing, you know, all that she had ahead of her. She had a full scholarship to Tuskegee Institute in the United States to be a part of their amazing track team. And she had to step down from, of course, the Olympic team. So that whole vision went out the window as a result of, you know, getting pregnant with me. And then I was born, and my father rejected both of us. So she lived the first 4 years of my life in despair. So family put money together, sent us to the United States to make a new start.
Mm-mm-mm. Every time I hear a story like this, where it is so personal and so real, this whole issue of pro-life, abortion, all of that becomes then just right up at the front of your mind. It's the top of mind reality that you wouldn't be here, your life, and thinking about all that you're being called to do, all of what God has allowed you to do. You were given that chance because of a decision to keep this child, and I'm grateful she did.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, look, each life is a gift from God, filled with potential, filled with gifts, talents, and abilities to contribute to humanity. So we never know what life we're giving up when we make decisions like that.
Ooh, 4 years just living and kind of trying to make a new pathway. How did that turn out after that time?
Well, we came to the United States, ended up in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, and that's where I grew up. You know, I came September 30th, 1957, and, you know, we settled down there. She began to work, and I was a latchkey kid, and she worked two jobs to try to, you know, make ends meet. And then I started going to school growing up in Brooklyn and learning the culture. And then with the desegregation program, I was part of the kids that were bused from a black and brown community to a white community in Queens to go to school. So I had the opportunity, and I call it an opportunity, to grow up in two contexts, in the context of my neighborhood that I lived in with black and Latinos, and the context of those that I went to school with, which was Irish, Italian, and German, and Jewish. And I built relationships there and friendships there. So it was like growing up in two worlds.
Mm. Because you're still living in Brooklyn during that time frame, that would have been one of the more difficult time frames in the New York area. And you were right in the middle of that. Then add in the whole busing thing. That really made for a very... well, I'll just say diverse type of background that you were experienced in. How did you handle that in your own heart?
Well, for me, you don't may not know. My father was a white Spaniard, and my mother, a black woman, descendants, of course, of Africans who were brought over to the Caribbean and Central America. I was product of an interracial marriage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being fair-skinned, I had to work my way because you're too light to be black and too dark to be white. So you get caught in this middle that you have to navigate. And it was an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it shaped me, fashioned me, made me who I am. And as you mentioned, in the 1960s, especially in New York, you know, it across the country, it was a tumultuous decade. A decade of every possible revolution taking place in our country, spiritual revolution, music revolution, political and social revolutions, the civil rights movement. So in my neighborhood, you know, we sort of gathered around Malcolm X and not Dr. Martin Luther King. We gathered around strength. and the influences of the Nation of Islam, the Black Muslim movement, finally captured me and gave me a sense of strength, order, identity, discipline. But I didn't find God there, mm-hmm. even though I spent 5 years within the nation. And I didn't buy into the scapegoating of white people. I understood that it's systems and structures that oppress, and we have to hold the people in those systems, you know, accountable. So I didn't buy into that. Somehow, Mike, God granted me the grace to intuitively know that God, truth, and reality were synonymous. And if I found one, the other two should be present. And I found a truth in the Nation of Islam. I found a way, a life, but it wasn't the way, the life, the truth. So God, you know, sent messengers to me throughout that five-year period to pray for me, to present an alternative. And I don't know how far we go with this story, but, you know, in 1971, my wife and I had a visitation, a very strange visitation. We were walking down the streets in Brooklyn, New York, and two older women came towards us and approached my wife. And they pulled her aside, had a conversation with her while I stood there. And then she came, you know, over to me, and we started walking where we were going. And I said, "What was that all about?" She said, "Well, they asked me two questions." I said, "Well, what were the questions?" She said, "They asked me if I loved you." And, of course, I wanted to know that.
Yeah, of course.
I told them yes. And then she said, "They asked me if I was ready for what God has for you." And mind you, I'm not a Christian. I'm in a radical, you know, Black Muslim movement, and still searching. But what God had in store, that was strange. And I again asked her, "What did you say?" And she said, "Yes, I'm ready for that." But she had no idea what was ahead. Neither did I. So we continued walking and left them. And Mike, when we turned around, because she said to me, she said, "You know what, let me go ask them what this is all about." And when we turned around, we could not find them. So I will leave that to your biblical imagination.
Yeah.
But it was very real. And that was 1971, 72, my wife and I got married. 73, her aunt, who's a Methodist minister, calls her and says, "I want your husband to come over, and I don't want you to come with him." My wife was a little upset because she said, "Wait a minute, you're my aunt. What do you mean, don't come with him?" She said, "No, I want him alone." So I went with respect to her. She had me kneel down, Mike, and she put her hand on my big afro, and she prayed for me. She said that God told her to anoint me. Again, I have the language now, but I had no idea what was going on back then. So that was 73. 74, I end up with a secretary, a little Pentecostal woman named Daisy Lopez, who would give me tracts and, you know, little chick tracts about Jesus. And, you know, I was always cerebral, and she couldn't answer my intellectual questions. But it was her simple childlike faith, Mike, that really gripped my heart. So finally, at the end of that year, 1974, she invited my wife and I to a meeting where a guy named Nicky Cruz, who was a gang leader,
oh my goodness,
a former gang leader, was giving his testimony about how he came to Christ. So my wife and I went. That was January 11, 1975. And that night, Mike, two things dropped in my heart. Number one, I'm the God you're looking for. I knew intuitively it was Jesus. And number two, I and my word are one. And that was so important because the images of Jesus were so confusing. You know, I saw a white Jesus. I saw a black Jesus with an afro. I saw an Indian Jesus. You know, I saw all these images of Jesus. So I just felt that, okay, now I've got to study this scripture. If he and his word are one, I've got to study this scripture to find out the real Jesus. And that's where I encountered him in a very deep and profound way that transformed my life and brought me into ministry.
Oh, my goodness. You know, during that time frame, Nicky Cruz was sharing that testimony through Crossing the Switchblade, through the book I read, Run, Baby, Run. I know
right.
that you got to hear him in person. And I tell you, there was a tree that we had in front of our house when I was a young man growing up. Like upper elementary years and early high schools, I would climb that tree and read. And I read that book up a tree.
Wow.
That's where I was. Wow. And his story so impacted my life as a young man. And you're privileged to get to hear him face to face.
Well, it was amazing, Mike, because I went around the world in ministry later on sharing that story. And 20 years later, Nikki and I met, and we established a relationship, and we've been friends ever since. He was out to dinner with my son and I about 2 years ago, and he's just played an important role in my life for bringing me to Christ that night.
Wow. That is such a great story, and thankful for testimonies. And, you know, if you just pause for a moment and think about Nikki, as much as God was using him, he had no idea that when he would come up and stand on a pulpit platform, talk to people with you being one in the audience, he would have no idea of the impact that his words that night were going to have in not only his life, but your life, and how his words changed your life and how your life is now changing so many others.
Yeah. It's brilliant. It's the brilliance of God. God, in his providence, knows, and his wisdom, knows how to orchestrate things in our lives. And that's why I trust him, you know, with my life.
Boy, I tell you what, that was a fun time for you, I am sure, to meet the Lord with those kinds of things. And your background, having spent time in the Muslim kind of walk that you were walking, and I love the way you said it, you weren't fully given in to everything. And I think that, too, gives a lot of people hope and faith that people that they're reaching out to who might be Muslim, who might be Hindu or different religions, they're not out of reach by the gospel and for the gospel.
That's right. That's right. We should never give up on them. And, you know, I've learned to see the world through God's love, the lens of God's love for broken and wounded humanity. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, Mike, that elevates the life and dignity of the human person and erases all of the human divisions that exist in our world.
Mm, I love this. So privileged today to have A.R. Bernard on the line. A.R. is a pastor, and he is going to be one of the featured guests at the big event coming up in September in Orlando, the Better Man event. It will be beamed around the world virtually. And we're so excited to have him on the line today. We're going to learn more about him and his ministry coming up in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to The Shepherd. Listen, we all know in business nowadays, one of the hardest things to get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, right? Trying to get content, good content at that, always struggling with your phone, never understanding the settings, and then when you finally post the picture or video, it looks terrible. Well, I'm about to let you in on a little secret in how to make this problem simply go away. I'm talking about Boundless Drone Services. Let me tell you, Boundless Drone Services takes away all the stress. Brian and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Or maybe you'd like to do what we did at Mark Radio and have them highlight the wonderful team that you have working for you. At Boundless Drone Services, they really can do it all. Contact them today at 407-601-2438 or go directly to their website at boundlessdroneservices.com to see how they can help you take your business to the next level in marketing. My guest today in the studio is actually on the line from Brooklyn area, is A.R. Bernard, a pastor. For how many years have you been at the church where you are there now in Brooklyn?
Gosh, Mike, I started this church in 1978, so it's been 42 years.
Oh my goodness.
Of ministry.
You know, it's not every day that I get to talk to people who, number one, have been in ministry that long. Number two, it's so unusual, and would this not be your experience as well, for a pastor to stay rooted and stay in one place for 42 years?
You know, in the beginning, you know, the church was my whole shepherding experience. But as God continued to move me from level and through stages at each level, he expanded that pastoral responsibility. So I moved from pastoring the church to pastoring the community to pastoring the city to shepherding a nation in some ways and then globally. Mm. So it's been in levels and stages.
Wow. Well, it's really exciting, and I just think it says a whole lot about what God can do in a man if he just settles. And I love your heart, your humble attitude. It's just refreshing to get to talk to someone who is as known as you are, and yet you're just so down to earth, and I appreciate that about you. You know, we talked a little bit about the fact that your relationship with Denzel Washington, who's going to be featured with the Better Man event coming in Orlando on September 18th, but you'll be the one actually doing that interview with him, and that will, of course, be presented globally, virtually, across all of the different countries that are going to be signing up this year via the video that you've just shot in L.A. But again, how did the doors, when you were there and you're doing what all pastors do, you're preaching the word, you're caring for your flock, you're seeing people come in, but then all of a sudden the onion begins to be pulled away, the layers are going away, and you find that you've got the door open to what this thing of what some would call celebrities. What was that like for you?
Well, you know, we had celebrities coming to the church, inviting others to the church. We were somewhat of a phenomenon in terms of our rapid growth and development, and also my style. I can get a little preachy sometimes, but I'm less of a preacher. I'm a teacher. So, and I also live and thrive at the intersection of faith and culture. I always believed that the church was more than just a religious institution, that it's a social cultural institution. And that's the whole idea of going into all the world, the cosmos, the social order, and bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I was always shaped and fashioned and grew in the context of Christ in culture and transforming culture, reaching people. And one of the things that I learned very quickly about celebrities is that they're human beings, just like us. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we live in a celebrity-obsessed and novelty-obsessed society.
We do.
You know, that's the reality. But these are human beings who would like passions as you and I, and they need protection. They need understanding. They need patience because they occupy a very unique situation. So it is a culture that I had to learn about and understand the importance of the big word trust, because they, you know, struggle to trust people because of how many people try to exploit them, whether it's fans or whether it's people in the business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I learned how to be a good steward with these relationships, and that was a blessing from God, and word spread that, you know, I could be trusted in that way.
That's a beautiful thing. And to see that kind of trust really grow, and I know the web of influence that God has allowed you to have in your life, it really has grown. It's spread. And people do talk when they trust somebody. They become a little bit of a spokesperson themselves about the person that they've just met and trust.
Yeah. You know, I trust is an assured reliance on the person's character, their ability, their strength, their network of relationships, the truth that they speak. You know, there's a lot that goes into that word trust.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're meeting in Brooklyn still. This church has been there, as we said, for 42 years. What part of Brooklyn are you located in?
Well, we are in an area called Spring Creek, Starrett City area, East New York, East Brooklyn. We haven't always been there. We went through a journey from meeting in a house to a storefront to a loft to hotel ballrooms to the Salvation Army Auditorium until we finally purchased a shopping center that we converted into a church, and then finally in late 90s built the building that we are in now, which is our main campus. It is a 10.5-acre campus And we're actually involved in a $1.2 billion development project to bring affordable housing, retail, and commercial spaces to build what we call the urban village. And we are looking at shovels in the ground next year to start the construction.
Oh, wow. And this is that thing that you're mentioning about being at that crossroads of the spiritual lives with the culture. And that's just a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Yeah, it's exciting. And, you know, to leave this kind of legacy and to help people, to empower people and housing. And the timing is great because we're in a housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, changes are being made. People are recovering from COVID. Certain limits on eviction and foreclosures are being lifted. So people are facing a real crisis for housing. And this is affordable housing, and yet it is affordable housing that allows for upward mobility. So it's different levels, different income levels that we are building for all in the same complex.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that that is your main campus. And so by inference, it sounds like you have other campuses too.
Yeah, we have a 4-acre campus in Long Island. And that's where we do most of our television production work. But we have a wonderful church established there by my son, Jamal. And we're establishing a church in Orlando area in Central Florida.
How exciting.
Yes.
That is so great.
And my wife said, okay, I'm ready to relocate. I said, wait a minute.
Now we'll get to maybe have some time with you here in our studio. That would be wonderful.
That would be fantastic, yeah. But, you know, I'm so politically engaged up here in New York and have been over time. In 2013, I was asked by the Republican Party to if I would run for mayor. And I spent about 3 or 4 months just exploring that possibility, knowing whether it was God's will or not. And during that 3 or 4 months, Mike, I was the lead candidate without declaring my candidacy.
Mm-mm.
So it was interesting, but I just did not feel in my spirit that it was what I should have been doing. And my congregation had mixed feelings about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into politics, you have to make sure that God's called you because he's the one who will protect you, because it can be an ugly business.
It certainly can be. It's a necessary thing. And
absolutely.
I pray, I know this is the real rub for you, is that while you know that you would have a lot to say and a lot of influence, it's got to really be, like you said, it's got to be the will of the Lord, because with all of the good that you could be doing, there's just so much that would be affected. Your church, number one, would be affected,
yep,
by that.
That's right. My church and my family. And those,
yeah,
are the things that I thought about. So now in 2021, I'm reconsidering some things, not running for office, but definitely helping the next mayor in a more meaningful way. So you and your audience can keep that in your prayers.
Absolutely.
We need people. We need God's wisdom in the halls of political power. And New York City has the largest budget in the country for any city, and it's an international city. So, you know, there's a lot involved.
You know, one of the things that you would be wonderful to speak to, one of these issues that I'm so fascinated by, and that would be the role that pastors can play and indeed should play with their church when it comes down to these issues, these everyday issues like politics. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, and look, we've come out of a very opinionated, if I say the least adjective to describe it, political season.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no doubt.
And, you know, I think that our people who do have the power of the vote need for pastors to opine on these social issues, but they must be informed. And they must understand that they should establish the fact that ultimate loyalty goes to God. Ultimate authority goes to God. Ultimate trust and dependency goes to God. Then after God, we look to political leaders to make a difference in public policy that affects the quality of life. So I think that in light of the fact that our electoral system has been designed for an educated electorate. The pastors have a responsibility to educate as best they can, or at least make available an education for their people on how to vote,
mm-hmm.
you know, what they should look for, how they should think, you know. And for us, it's about a set of values that we subscribe to and how these political officials will respond and represent those values.
Mm. That's very well said. You know, 150 years ago, it was not uncommon at all for the pastor in the community in America to be one of the more knowledgeable, because of his reading, because of his just awareness, to be one of the most involved in helping people through the political issues of the day. And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And we have to, you know, I think it's important that we present the case for both sides of the issue intelligently and fairly and truthfully, without any biases, and then encourage our people to choose mm-hmm. based upon that information.
Mm. You know, this has also been a very difficult season for us all because of the COVID crisis that's going on. And New York has had more than its share of spotlight news about the stuff that's gone on with the nursing homes, with the change, the restrictions to Manhattan. And have things of recent been looking more normal there?
Absolutely, Mike. We were the epicenter for this virus, and I contracted the virus in March. March 28th, I went into the hospital for a week, and it was a grave situation for me. So I'm grateful to be here talking to you and your audience. God, you know, was very gracious in helping me recover from that. And we were the epicenter. And, you know, unfortunately, it exposed a lot of deficiencies in our systems and structures when it came to healthcare in New York. And I think, you know, that mandated that our governor, our mayor, our political officials, our leaders take time to think through their response to COVID. And our governor did an outstanding job, no matter what criticism you have of him, and of course our mayor also. But we had to go through a longer process because we were the epicenter. We had the highest number of cases and deaths.
Without a doubt. It was a very difficult time. And now with this new variant that's kind of raging right now, some numbers are higher now than they were in 2020.
Yeah, and you guys are getting hit hard with it. So now we're going back to, you know, the precautions that we wanted to get away from.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, they helped save lives. You know, you think about the Spanish flu in 1918. It took, Mike, about 2 years for things to get back to what even then was considered the new normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's shaping that way right now for us here. A.R. Bernard is on the line with me, pastor from Brooklyn, and so excited to hear about this new thing that's happening. And it's actually happening in the same month as the Better Man event. So we look forward to hearing about this, the news of your church plan. I know there are still things that are being worked out, but we will be praying for you, sir. And really excited to hear about what part of Orlando and all that you'll be aiming for.
Yeah, and look, there are great churches and great ministries already established in the Orlando area, and we want to come alongside and bring, you know, the anointing that God has placed upon us and work together. So we were in 2019 meeting with pastors and leaders and, you know, having dinners and building relationships and friendships, because I think that's the way it should be too often. Mm-hmm. And we experienced that in New York City, where, you know, ministries are going to come in and save New York as though no one's been there for the last, 300 years, you know. But we don't take that posture. We want to build relationships and understand that each church brings something unique in its unique personality and character to the kingdom of God. And we work together.
Well, it's an exciting area, and we're so glad to have you and your people that will be moving here. I know that's going to be very exciting for all of us to benefit from your ministry, and I really am looking forward to getting to meet you at the Better Man event, and so thankful that you took the time today to be on our program.
Mike, thank you so much. How long have you been doing this show, by the way? I'm interviewing you.
This show started, I spent 36 years in the ministry myself. My early years in out of college were in broadcasting, and I did that for about 10 years before going into ministry. And then I was in ministry for 36 and retired in October of 2019. Now, I started this show even before I officially retired. I started it in July of 2019. So we moved down here in October of that year, just before the pandemic began. And so now we're back in Orlando. I spent 17 years here before moving to Gainesville. Worked there 17 years in a ministry up there, and now we're back in Orlando.
Well, Mike, do people like us ever retire? I think we transition to new things.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think we retire.
I'm hoping not. the kind of retirement plan I have is going to be in heaven, and it's going to be wonderful.
Amen to that, Mike. It's been wonderful being with you and your audience, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, you've got it, and we look forward to seeing you again at the Better Man event. This is A.R. Bernard, a pastor from Brooklyn. We'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Hey, we all know in business that one of the hardest things to really get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, but I'm here to tell you a little secret that will make the problem simply go away. Boundless Drone Services. They take away all the stress. Brian Fay and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Boundless Drone Services. Contact them today. BoundlessDroneServices.com. I'm sitting in the studio today with Billy Durbin. She is from Central Florida. Welcome to my program.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I love having folks like you on the program. People, I believe their testimony. The Bible talks about we overcome them by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And God delivered you. He saved you. He's brought you through many things. And I thought it would be great for you to share a little bit about what God's done in your life.
Sure, sure. I read one time that it said you can't have a testimony without a test, right? So I like to joke and say that I think God was testing me over and over and over because I'm clearly just a stubborn person.
I think most of us are.
Yes, we
qualify for that.
Yeah. So I grew up in Ohio, actually. I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, a small, small town in central Ohio. And unfortunately, my parents made a lot of bad decisions, and I have three brothers as well, and we just grew up in a life of abuse. And so both my parents, unfortunately, were alcoholics and drug addicts. And so we were exposed to a lot of different things that as a child, you just shouldn't be exposed to. Child abuse, mental, physical, sexual, unfortunately, all four of us. And so there wasn't much conversation of the Lord in my home. Mm-hmm. And so it was really rough. It was a rough childhood. And I think the Lord was really looking down upon me, and he had a plan for me all along. I met my husband, who is my high school sweetheart, in high school. And
In Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we only moved to Florida about 5 or 6 years ago. So new to the Florida area.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say that I wasn't really looking for a husband. I was shopping for in-laws because I got the most amazing in-laws. And my good friend Brittany shared something with me not that long ago. She said, I heard someone call them in-loves. And so I really love that because they are truly amazing people, and they helped lead me to the Lord. And so I always like to say they're my guardian angels.
That's wonderful. Now, what were the circumstances for somebody like yourself growing up in a very difficult childhood, very difficult family situation with abuse, with the drug abuse and alcoholism and all of that? How is it that you came to know the Lord?
So I had gone down the path that my parents had paved for us. And I was dabbling in drugs at a young age, and my initial years in high school, and I'd lost some really close friends as well in a car accident, and it just seemed like life was extremely tragic, and I didn't really think that I wanted to continue, so I was dabbling in things absolutely should not have. And I met my husband. He was new to our town and new to our school. And again, the Lord had a plan, because out of all of the people in my school, my husband Adam had set his eyes on me and was pursuing me. And through him, I was included in his family, even only a couple weeks of dating. And I remember we started dating in May, and my birthday is July. And they threw me my very first birthday party.
You had never had a family party?
No, never.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was really, and I just remember sitting back thinking, you don't know me. You know, I'm dating your son. I'm probably one of many. You know, why on earth would you do this for me? And they just always showed love and grace and the kindness of the Lord, and started inviting us to church together. And from that time on, I became involved and grew to know the Lord.
In Adam's church then.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The church him, his family went to.
So would that have been your first ever trip to a church?
No, actually it wasn't. I was invited by friends in school and had gone, but you know, it was more of like a social club. Unfortunately, when you're a kid, you're going just to be with friends and have fun. And so there was some exposure to the Lord, but never was there that pulling on me, you know, that this is what I belong to, and this is that God was calling out to me specifically until I met my in-laws. Yeah.
I like the in love thing.
I do too.
That's something that my family, we've used that many years. I'm not sure where or who it was that first introduced that concept to us. But, you know, I think the sad, it is really truly sad reputation that in-laws have had in jokes and, you know, when you think about movies and talking where a guy would be talking about his mother-in-law in the most negative of terms. And that certainly was never my experience with my own mother-in-law. And we, I had the privilege of working for my father-in-law. He was a pastor. So I had my first role in ministry working for my own in-laws, and I just love them dearly. And, you know, when you think about a person like yourself who had that sad but all too often common experience of being raised in either a difficult family or a dysfunctional family or a broken family, and then when you add in all of the abuse that you've gone through, that had to be like a saving grace to see a family accept you in and draw you in, make you feel like one of them.
Yeah, over and over. I mean, just over and over. And as a Christian, I feel like we're always under construction, right? God's never done with us, even when we feel like, you know, things are right and in place. And so my husband and I, you know, continued to kind of go through trials as we dated and got married and began to have children. And my in-laws have been there by our side from day one, always praying with us, always showing us the grace of the Lord. And so my mother-in-law is my very best friend. She's not just my mother-in-law, but she has been my mother and my best friend. So yeah, very, very lucky, very blessed.
What advice or what encouragement do you often give people who would have been just like you, who right now are not seeing that light at the end of the tunnel for them?
I would say, you know, I feel like God has that path, and he's going to pull on their heart at some point, and they're going to be at a crossroads where they get to choose that path that they go down. And to look for the hope, look optimistically for the hope and the goodness in people, because when you do that, you're going to find supportive, loving community that you need to surround yourself with.
You know, I think one thing that's probably come to you in discussions, communications with people is that they feel that their situation is too bad. It's too unique. It's too far gone, and they'll never be able to have a nice, wonderful family life. But that is not true, right?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, it's a misconception that when you find the Lord and you become saved, that everything's perfect, right? That's what everybody thinks. As soon as I start tithing, money will come in flowing. As soon as I, you know, give myself to the Lord, life will be perfect. And it's not. It isn't. And, you know, after my husband and I got married, he was in a really bad car accident and was in a coma on life support. And, you know, again, the grace of God brought us through that. My children were all born extremely early. My oldest was only 2 pounds when he was born. And again, through it all, God carried us through every bit of it. So even when you find the Lord, he's still going to continue to challenge you. Mm-hmm. But we need to be the example for him. We need to show people the grace of God, because he will bring you through that storm. He's brought me through every one of them. And again, I wouldn't have the testimony if he didn't give me the test. Mm-hmm. But I have come on the other side of every single one of those tests, and I praise him through it all.
And I'm sure you found out that a lot of the tests that you go through are not just for your own growth, but they are having a spillover effect on all your friends, your family members, people who are yet to be your friends, but will be. And maybe they're just watching your life and they know a little bit about what you've gone through. And it just is a true, amazing thing to them that you would be I think you're just a very friendly person, and no one would ever know. Yeah. By talking with you at first meeting you, that you've gone through such a difficulty in your life.
Yeah. And I used to be ashamed of it. You know, growing up being a young adult, you didn't want anybody to know that you lived in poverty or you were sexually abused or physically abused. That's not something that you're proud of, right? But as I've continued to walk along my life with God, I've realized that we all struggle with something. It doesn't matter what that something is, mm-hmm. but we need to be human, right? God mirrored himself, Jesus, after us, but he never said we were going to be perfect. And we can share and connect in our imperfections. And so that imperfection for me has what I've allowed to just be the example that God can deliver anybody and everybody.
I always love the image of steel and what is called tempered steel, and steel is made stronger by sending it through the fire. And when that happens to us, when we're sent through the fire, we feel it's going to burn us up and destroy us, but often it is being used by God to temper us, to strengthen us. And that's exactly what has happened in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That's really good. I like that a lot. That's a great analogy. Now, obviously, world isn't perfect. Life isn't perfect. But I don't wake up every morning scared of what might be. I wake up every morning with, you know, the confidence that God's going to carry me through it, no matter what it is. And my hope really is just to be able to pass that on to my children. They attend Altamont Christian School here in Altamont.
Great school.
It is a great school. Yeah. We're just really loving it and so thankful we were able to get connected with them. And, you know, because they're the future, you know, they're going to perpetuate the word of God to, you know, in the future. And so I feel like it's not just my responsibility to share my story for others who are struggling, but also to pass that on to my children. You know, just who God is and what the grace is. And so
it's really encouraging to hear your kids are doing so well, especially with the challenges, physical challenges that they've had. So that did not deter them at all.
No. And I, you know, again, grace of God, I feel like I'm repeating that over and over. Even though they were all born early, they are all premature. My oldest being the earliest at 2 pounds. He had no issues, no health issues. He's now pushing 6 feet, going to be 16 in a couple weeks.
Oh, my word. Yeah.
And so, you know, very, very fortunate, very blessed for sure. They're all doing amazing.
And so great to know that their lifetime, their background, their growing up years will be so radically different. And yet that is just part of the redemption story that we all have in one way or another. We've all been redeemed, and your kids are going to get to grow up, and I know what would have been a lifetime that you would have loved to have had. And, you know, I think that's so encouraging that when people who hear a story, Billy, like yours, that they think, oh, there's hope for me in spite of what I've felt. And, you know, one of the things that I think we all have to realize, the enemy would love to discourage. And I'm sure at times the enemy's tried to discourage you in your life, but you were obviously able to push past and through that.
Yeah. And working on it always, you know, you don't forget, you know, so when you let God in and you dedicate your life to him, you don't forget all the bad things. Those don't just disappear from your mind. They're always going to be there. And sometimes it is a struggle. It's hard not to fall into the I'm not worthy. And, you know, why did all this happen to me? And so he's still working on me. I still got to turn to him each and every day for that support. Mm-hmm. And so it's It's always a challenge. Like I said, we're always under construction.
We've got just a little bit of time left. Tell me about, you lead a small group, and I think I love small groups. Cindy and I led a small group for many, many years in our church, and that really helps people not only get involved in the church, but it helps them in their life, right?
Absolutely. So I do lead a small group at Anchor Church in Maitland. It's a wonderful startup church, and it's just been wonderful for our family. We did attend other churches in Central Florida before finding them, and they've been wonderful. I had an opportunity to lead small group, and I actually came to find them through a small group. A friend of mine introduced me and asked me to come to their Christmas get together. And you know, you just have expectations it's going to be like every other church, and it wasn't. It was not like any other church. And I felt immediately connected to these young ladies, and it was a very intimate but fun atmosphere. And I, again, just felt the Lord pulling that this was the community that I was meant to find here in Florida.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, growing up in Ohio, it was hard to leave an established community and church that was wonderful and support system. And so I struggled finding that home here initially. And then, you know, God gave me them, and it's just been wonderful. I just feel blessed to be able to have community with those young ladies.
Well, we're so grateful that you took the time to come by the Shepherd Studio and talk to us about this and give such an encouraging testimony to the grace of God in your life and the grace of God available to everyone's life who is hearing and say, hey, I would like some of that, that love, that forgiveness, that cleansing, that new hope, all of the things. And a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
It's great to have you here. And friends, thank you for joining us today on our program. We'll see you the next time, Afternoons with Mike, right here on The Shepherd.